the Mountain Broadcast Center. This is Take 2. Me, Martinez. It is the last day to vote. If you want to in person, be in line by 8. We'll hear how it's looking at polling centers all over L.A. and Orange County. Plus, saving democracy and the U.S. Postal Service with one artistic swipe. All you got to do is draw a picture on a postcard and drop it in a mailbox. And yes, you got to pay for the stamp. It's all ahead on Take 2. Stay with us. From 89.3 KPCC and KPCC.org, this is Take 2. I'm A. Martinez. So glad to have you with us today. Well, here we are, the last day to vote in the 2020 election. Remember, polls close at 8 o'clock. Still plenty of time left to vote in person. Just be in line by 8 o'clock and stay in line. If you stay in line, you will get a chance to vote for sure. You can also drop off that ballot at a voting center. There are a ton of them throughout Los Angeles County. We have a complete list on our website at votergameplan.com. And throughout the show today, we're going to be checking in on a handful of them. We'll also keep you updated on any long lines, tech issues, other shenanigans, and on what you can do if you encounter any problems. Plus, we're also going to discuss the importance of postcards.
During lockdown, I found writing and sending letters and mail, it was pretty much the one thing that was keeping me kind of sane.
Yeah, two local artists explain how it can save not only the Postal Service, but also our democracy. That's coming up in about 30 minutes. But without further ado, let's go to the polls and talk to KPCC's Sharon McNary. Sharon, you've been all over town, from the Forum to Beverly Hills and now Santa Monica. What's generally been your takeaway on how things have been going so far?
It is super chill. No lines. People practically walk right in, drop off their ballot. They get to use the ballot marking machines. I would say the most drama and action I've seen today has been at the selfie stations that have been set up in the different polling places. They've got a gigantic I've voted sticker at the Forum, and there's like a step in pose, you know, like you'd see at a movie premiere.
Yeah.
Over here at Santa Monica College, where I am right now.
Well, you need to hit the right angles, too, when you do a selfie. I mean, that's very important. Now, you know, this is only the second election under this new process with so many voting centers everywhere using computers and such. And we know during the primary, there were a lot of hiccups. What have voters been saying about all of this time around?
You know, I think practice makes perfect. You know, they got the glitches in the gigantic voter database straightened out. It's smooth, and people come out, they seem very happy. I talked to a guy who's an engineer, so you know he's going to have an appreciation for exactitude. And it was his first time using the ballot marking devices, and he said it was really easy. He liked that he could take the piece of paper out of the ballot marking device, look at his answers, and then put it back in to have it sent off for counting.
So fair to say, Sharon, you think that the anxiety that a lot of people have been feeling heading into this day has maybe evaporated, at least for now?
It's still daylight. You know, the people haven't left work who are still working. We haven't seen, you know, the big lineups at the polls just yet. But as people start thinking about the day ticking away and whether they want to be part of this very historic election, I think you might see some ratcheting up. But one sign of the anxiety, I must say, in Beverly Hills and quite a number of other locations, we've seen storefronts boarded up, just kind of bracing for any kind of the same unrest we saw with the racial justice demonstrations back in May and June. But in addition to that, out in back of the Beverly Hills police station, I saw that they had augmented their security with officers from Santa Paula, and they had brought the Santa Paula City Police Department SWAT vehicle. It's this big tank-like thing. They were slapping tape on each other's name tags and writing their badge numbers. I presume they're their badge numbers on the tape. And there were private security everywhere. I looked in Beverly Hills. So there does seem to be some bracing for potential problems there. But other than that, I mean, it's a very, very mellow vibe today. I think people are just really relieved to have this over with.
All right. That's KPCC Sharon McNary at Santa Monica College. Sharon, thanks a lot.
You bet.
That's good to hear from Sharon that it's been chill. You know what? I think all of us will just take downright boring. That would be nice. A boring day that winds up, you know, being effective in terms of counting everything. So, okay, nerves, though, they have been a little frayed heading into the day, this last day to vote. So we heard Sharon talk about the prep in Beverly Hills. And if you drive around town, you'll see shops boarded up in anticipation of some sort of unrest after results start coming in tonight. It is, to say the least, unsettling. But there are things that you can do to feel uneasy for any reason. So to talk about that, we have Errol Suthers. He's a professor of the practice in National and Homeland Security and the director of the Safe Communities Institute at the University of Southern California. Professor Suthers, there's been a lot of talk about poll watchers being out and about today. So can you remind us about what poll watchers' roles are on Election Day?
Absolutely. And again, thank you for having me today. And I hope everybody's voted or planning to. So poll watchers are allowed to actually watch voting in California, but I want to remind your listeners that's all that they can basically do. You know, everybody who's legally entitled to vote has the opportunity to vote. A poll watcher's real responsibility is to watch and report issues to polling place authorities and party officials.
And that's it, right? I mean, just watch. That is all that they are supposed to be doing, just to be clear.
That is absolutely correct. They are to observe and report. They can't stop you, ask you questions, detain you, prevent you from voting. All of that is federally protected and illegal and should not be happening.
Now, I guess I've been wondering then why this idea of the poll watcher has rattled people, because poll watchers have been around since, a single election to observe and make sure everyone's following these rules. So what's different, you think, Professor, this year?
I think what's different is a couple of things. First of all, we've got these baseless fraud allegations that have, for now months, undermined confidence in this year's election. And instead of using the term poll watcher, we've heard the term lookouts. So, and these lookouts have been suggested under the guise of voter security. So it's less an exercise of civic mindedness and more an exercise of voter intimidation. And that's why the term poll watcher now has become synonymous with lookouts and voter security, and people are really concerned and fearful of it.
So you mentioned that they're not to interfere with anyone in any way. What should people do, though, if someone does try to interfere with their vote?
Well, what they should do is kindly ask them to step out of their way. If they are able to, obviously take a photograph, and almost reversing the role of the poll watcher, they should now report. And they can report this directly to the FBI Civil Rights Division, which has a toll-free number. It's 1-800-253-3931. They can do that. They can also report it to several other places like the Election Protection Hotline, which is 866-OUR-VOTE or 866-687-8683. And again, anybody who encounters witness intimidation, or I should say voter intimidation today, can do that and should do that.
All right. Now, I know in your line of work, you've heard from people who've expressed concern about voting in public this year. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're hearing from people and why you think they feel this way?
I have in the last 24 hours, particularly since the bus incident in Georgia, I've had several people call and ask, where can I buy a taser? I've had one person expressed some concerns about the space between their home and the poll and being very fearful of going there, fearful of being stopped by someone at a traffic light. We've seen incidents across the country where the road rage now has become politicized. We had an incident in Torrance over the weekend where an individual jumped out in a road rage incident, and it turned into a Heil Hitler salute and someone's car getting assaulted and he went to jail. So people are very concerned about their safety in terms of safe passage from home to the poll. And that's been expanded to even from home to the grocery store and other places, because we are in a very challenging and complex time right now. And it's very partisan and it's very heated. And as your previous guest said, we all need to exhale and calm down. and just really start to respect each other again.
Yeah. And the good thing, Sharon, who we talked to earlier, said that things are chill so far, at least where she's been in the Santa Monica area. For anyone, though, Professor, in closing, who might still be worried, what would you like to say to them?
I'd like to say, first of all, they should be voting and go vote. It's always helpful. And if voting or to the grocery store, if you can go with someone these days, I've found people to be particularly friendly. Maybe it's because they've got a mask on and you know, we can only see eyes now and people have been friendly. But I think people should go out and practice social distancing. And just remember, you know, as John Lewis said, your vote matters. If it didn't, why would some people keep trying to take it away? So this is the most important day in a democratic society that we have. And I'm glad that we have had a record number of Californians, 12 million, yeah, vote early. That's a good sign, and I think we're on to a good day. Regardless of the outcome, I think it's good that people are exercising their rights to vote.
That's Errol Southers, director of the Safe Communities Institute at USC. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, as states continue to count mail-in ballots, there's a good chance we won't know who won by the end of the night, be it for president or a congressional seat. And with that may come a period of uncertainty and possibly premature claims of victory. So to help mitigate disinformation on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Google have all announced policies to help neutralize the spread of false information that could undermine the election process. For more on what these tech companies are doing, we have Gilad Edelman with us. He covers the intersection of technology and politics for Wired. Now, if we've learned anything from the 2016 campaign, is that social media plays a pretty important role in facilitating the spread of information and disinformation. Gilad, what have we seen that unfolds this year?
Well, a big one, of course, has been effort, most notably by President Trump, to undermine confidence in mail-in voting. So kind of from the moment it became clear that there was going to be a big shift to mail-in voting because of the pandemic, the president and some of his allies have taken to social media, among other places, I should say, but largely on social media, to claim without any evidence that expanded mail-in voting means expanded fraud and that it'll be a disaster and just generally trying to undermine confidence in the validity of those results.
How does what's going on in 2020 compare to what we saw in 2016?
I think there's a lot we could say, but the difference that stands out the most is that in 2016, and particularly in the aftermath of 2016, a lot of the conversation was about foreign interference, and there was some good reporting about the key role that foreign operators played in seeding American social media with fake news. This year, the fact of the matter is that the biggest source of disinformation around the election is the president himself. And that really poses different and more challenging issues for these platforms.
But that's not to say that foreign interference hasn't still occurred, right?
No, it's not to say that. There definitely are still examples of foreign actors, but the ratio of foreign to domestic has shifted a lot.
Okay. Now, what are tech companies then doing this time around to keep disinformation under control?
I think a big story this year is that some of the platforms have gotten a lot more aggressive with fact-checking. Especially of politicians, and especially when it comes to false claims about the pandemic and also about voting-related stuff. So, these social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter really came up or sort of emerged with a very hands-off attitude. And we're very loath to do any kind of content moderation. And this year, they have gotten out of their comfort zone a little bit with that.
When it comes to how these policies have played out so far, how effective would you say they've been? Because, I mean, I know they're monitoring tweets and posts, but once you see something, I mean, you can't unsee what you've seen.
Totally. It's a really hard question to answer. How effective are they? You know, I mean, the highest profile examples would be something like Twitter applying a fact-checking label to a Trump tweet, which it did for the first time back in May of this year. And eventually Facebook caught up and did a little bit of that too. This is where Trump says some tweets or posts something false about voting or about COVID, and the platform will add a label, explain, you know, directing users to accurate information. How effective is that? We have no way to know. And as you say, though, a key question is, what do people see in the first place? And so another tool that the platforms have at their disposal is to limit the reach of a post, right? Limit its virality. Twitter has been more aggressive and a little bit more transparent about this by occasionally imposing, making it impossible or difficult to retweet or otherwise circulate misinformation. Facebook, by contrast, there have been some episodes where they say they're suppressing something, but it's a bit of a black box. It's hard to know from the outside how effectively they're doing that.
That's Gilad Edelman, politics writer for Wired, covering the intersection of technology and politics. Gilad, thanks a lot for coming on with us.
My pleasure.
All right, whichever way today winds up shaking out, at the end of it all, we have to figure out a way to live together. The key word there, together. Blue and red getting past the petty partisan politics and making the country work for everyone. I know it sounds impossible given what we've all experienced the last few years, but there is a group trying to workshop this divide. Hear how when Take Two continues in about 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Coming home, baby, now. I'm coming home now, right away. I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm sorry now I ever went away.
Back now with more Take Two on 89.3 KPCC and streaming on kpcc.org. I'm E. Martinez. KPCC reporters are spread throughout LA and Orange County today, reporting on the final day to vote right here in Southern California. Carla Javier has been covering the office of the Los Angeles County Registrar Recorder, and she's also been reporting on voting centers in Norwalk and North Hollywood. So, Carla, at a press conference this morning, Registrar Dean Logan talked about an unprecedented number of mail-in ballots. Let's take a listen.
That first return is likely to include as many as 2 million ballots, the highest we've ever had in a first return. In our first report in a past election, which was in 2016, was about 508,000. So what you're going to see in that first report of vote totals tonight is a much larger sampling of the entirety of L.A. County and the electorate in L.A. County.
So, Carla, what else stood out to you about the press conference this morning?
You know, at least by the time of that press conference, the registrar, Dean Logan, was talking about how pleased he was with operations and said that there were no major issues to report from that point. And from what I've seen at these two vote centers that I visited, granted a sample size of two, that seems to be the case. The lines are not terribly long and people are wearing masks and following safety protocols.
Tell us about some of the people you spoke with. I know you've done some reporting from Norwalk already this morning.
Yeah, I spoke with Dwayne Brandon from Watts. He's 26 years old. It's his first time voting, and he talked about going to vote for the first time and why he chose to do it in person.
I want them to feel my presence. You know, I want them to feel it. Like, yeah, they got people out here trying to vote for, you know, the right purposes. I wanted to, you know, to actually be like, yeah, I went down there and voted. I actually went down here and voted, you know, took my time out the day.
And he also told me, you know, he's 26, but this is his first election, so he doesn't consider himself the type of person who usually votes, but he felt like it was important to do so in person this year.
That's the best phrase I've ever heard to describe voting. I want them to feel my presence. That is just so cool. All right, now I know you've also just arrived in North Hollywood to cover voting there, but so far, what's your takeaway from the day?
You know, it's similar here. The line is not too long. It's almost like Disneyland. There's someone here telling you it's about a 7-minute wait from this point, about a 2-minute wait from here, so on and so forth. And at least from what I can tell, again, a sample size of 2 vote centers, people are following these safety precautions. They're taking them seriously. And there hasn't been, from what I can tell, at least early on, these long lines. So Dean Logan, the registrar, did encourage people to still go out to vote early if they were doing so in person to avoid some kind of backup later in the day.
And so far, it's a relief. Sharon says chill. You've said that it's been cool so far, so at least 2 spots so far, no problems. That's KPCC's Carla Javier reporting today on the office of the Los Angeles County Registrar Recorder and voting centers in Norwalk and North Hollywood. Carla, thanks a lot.
Thank you, A.
All right, no matter what the results of the election will be or when we'll get them, the truth is that our country may still remain divided. The challenge for all of us is how do we remain united despite our differences? Finding constructive ways to talk about political divides is something that the nonprofit organization Braver Angels has been working to do so since the 2016 election, and they've got plans to help during this one. Joining us to talk about this is Randy Liaz. He's the Braver Angels State Coordinator for California. Randy, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Now, the Braver Angels website lays out the problem. There's a growing animosity toward people from differing political parties and a growing divide in values between the parties. This election cycle, you've had an initiative called With Malice Toward None. So what sorts of workshops have you been having related to this?
Well, we've been having continual gatherings for With Malice Toward None to get people prepared to bring the country back together after what we always knew was going to be a really contentious election. And so we're prepared to support people with a lot of different events that just allow them to come together and deal with their emotions around what's going on around them. And so actually today we have a really important one. We're starting off at about 5 p.m. Okay. And we are helping people to come together in events that just we're calling them moments of peace. Because they just want to be with some other people who really want to hold the country together. And so we have continual programs that will allow people to gather in either religious gatherings or secular gatherings that are led by some of our leaders, some leaders from around the community, from religious communities, that just take people through some words of wisdom and solace and you know, reconciliation.
So, Randy, what happens at these workshops? Because if someone wants a moment of peace that has to do with politics lately, it's best if everyone just doesn't say a word.
Yeah, you know, we have definitely brought together a really great group of leaders that are each going to have something unique to say about what we're all going through. But we also have, the workshops that we generally focus on bring together reds and blues from both sides to actually talk to one another and to lay out why they think that their priorities are really important. But to do so in a way that the other side can hear them, and also to come together in a gathering where everyone is committed to listening to one another and not just there to change the people on the other side's minds.
Now, to be clear, this is a Zoom meeting, right? No one's gathering in person or anything like that?
Right, correct. Yeah. We're doing Zoom meetings all the time to have those red-blue workshops that I just referred to. And we also do skills training workshops to allow people to talk to those who are already in their lives. And just a lot of other programs like debates and public forums, things like that. So just a lot of things that are going on and generally all over Zoom.
Now, I've read that the foundation of your activities is what you call patriotic empathy. Can you tell us more about what patriotic empathy is and how that relates to the core principles of the organization?
Yeah, definitely. We really feel that it's our patriotic duty to keep up the conversations between the two sides, because if we stop talking to one another, then we we stop the progress that we're on, you know, the path of progress that we're on as a country. We have a marketplace of ideas in this democracy, and we should be testing out those ideas and always be willing to talk to someone who disagrees with us, even if it is a very strong disagreement. Because if we stop that conversation, then we're just not going to know what the motivations and the experiences and all of the influences that are creating the worldview that we're having such a difficulty kind of wrapping our heads around. So it's about keeping up that conversation, and it takes courage, because we know that there's a lot at stake when we have these conversations. So that's one of the reasons why we're called Braver Angels.
Using also intellectual humility. Tell us what that involves, because that's going to be difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, intellectual humility is a concept that I always come back to in terms of what our foundation is as an organization, because to me, it means the inherently the human condition, our inability to know the full perspective of everyone around an issue, right? We can't live live the life of someone else fully, and so really understand the experiences that have informed their views. So I think we also always need to come back to that understanding that our point of view is inherently narrow, and so therefore we should always be willing to listen to people with a different perspective.
All right, Randy, so what happens after all the votes have been counted, victors are declared? How is Braver Angels getting ready to help people at that point?
Yeah, and that's really the essence of our With Malice Toward None program, because it's helping to prepare a variety of different kinds of communities. So religious communities, educational institutions, community groups like Rotaries and Lions and other kind of foundational groups that help to, you know, weave together the fabric of our society. So we're training them to lead events. First, they're going to gather in separate groups because people really need some time to process their emotions. But then we're going to come back together and say, we totally commit to support one another going forward, regardless of whether we supported the victor or did not. And that's just a really important principle to us. So we're having people sign pledges like the Hold America Together pledge. So if you go on our website, it's a commitment to decry violence, right? To make sure that regardless of how strongly we feel about the election result, we're not going to resort to violence.
Yeah.
And we are still going to see the people who voted it a different way as full human beings who deserve our empathy and our fellow goodwill as citizens.
And who wouldn't support Holding America Together? That's Randy Liaz, Braver Angel State Coordinator for California. Randy, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
More Take Two coming up. Stay with us. Back now with more Take Two on 89.3 KPCC and streaming on the KPCC app. I'm E. Martinez. Voting is probably the most fundamental way to participate in a democracy. This year, that's meant a heavy reliance on the postal system. But once all the ballots are in, there are two LA artists who want you to keep using the United States Postal Service, this time to send them your art. The project is called Postcards for Democracy. It's the brainchild of Mark Mothersbaugh, the legendary film composer and co-founder of Devo, and the multimedia artist Beattie Wolf. Anyone can participate. All you need is a 35-cent stamp and a postcard that you create. Then you send it to their mailbox on Sunset Boulevard. We've got more information and some images on our website, LAist.com. Now, the idea came to Mothersbaugh and Wolf a few months ago in the midst of the lockdown. Here's Mark, then Beattie.
I'd just come out of ICU, so I was looking for something to do.
So it was something that, you know, during lockdown, I found writing and sending letters and mail, it was pretty much the one thing that was keeping me kind of sane. It was sort of this vital way of staying connected with one another, but actually with ourselves. You know, I think art and nature are core to our humanity, and technology can never really replicate, you know, the sort of sense of just sitting down and making something tangibly. And, you know, both in Mark's work, obviously, he's been exploring the postcard format for many decades. And it just felt like, you know, the combination of sort of being disconnected during lockdown, you know, having a way of sort of supporting USPS and our right to vote and giving people this creative outlet, but, you know, also ultimately reminding them of, you know, us all about the value of sort of physical communication and how that tangibly connects us in a way that, you know, social media and emails and all those other forms can never really replicate.
So, Mark, tell us about your love of postcards, because Beattie mentioned how you've been on this for a while now. What is it about postcards that you like so much?
When I was young, an artist, I was really interested in all the different conceptual art philosophies that were going on in Europe between World War I and World War II, and I really loved Dadaism and Surrealism and Futurism, and they would send things through the post to each other and add something on or retaliate and send another card back. And I started sending things to friends and found out that there was a healthy post-art movement going on in the world in late 60s, early 70s, and got involved in it. And I was a nobody, little punk in Akron, Ohio, and I found you could send something to Roy Lichtenstein or Jim Dine, and you might, a couple weeks later, get a piece of art back, and that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, postcard art, you know, my uncle was in prison, he would send me art through a postcard. I would try to draw him something back, but he was so good at it, and plus he had a lot of time to work on his postcard art. But yeah, there's a lot.
Wait a minute. P. Martinez?
No.
Was he in Lompoc?
He was up in Vacaville. That's where he was. A lot of inmates would send art through postcards because, number one, it was easier to draw something on a postcard because it's a lot harder than, say, a piece of paper. And so that would be their canvas of choice for a lot of inmates all up and down California. Mark, you mentioned how you just got out of the ICU. Was it coronavirus? Was that what you were dealing with?
Yeah, it was. I kind of waited too long to get checked by a doctor, so don't do that.
This project, though, I'm wondering how that experience, Mark, may have influenced this project in any way. Because, I mean, we're talking about communication and the way people communicate in a more personal, intimate level. And when someone's dealing with coronavirus, a lot of times they don't have that same communication with their loved ones, with their family, with their friends that they did before. So I'm wondering what this experience may have added to the project.
Well, if you know, I'm not sure. But I mean, if you look at my artwork, it definitely was affected by the things that I saw and experienced while I was in ICU.
How did that experience change or affect your art?
It's very surreal. And some of it's really, really dark. I remember there were times when I would just try to stay awake because I was afraid to close my eyes because I was in a dark part of delusions. And then there was another time where I have a memory of writing a whole album of new Devo music, so I've got that ready.
Talking to Mark Mothersbaugh and Beattie Wolf, the artist behind Postcards for Democracy. Mark, what kind of response have you had so far? Are you noticing any sort of theme to the art?
Well, that's the impressive part of it. There is the whole rainbow of ideas and things that are important to people. Some of them, they're just something, somebody wrote something on the back of a postcard really quick, or they cut out of a piece of a cereal box and drew something on the other side and sent it. Or somebody sat down and it looked like it took them all day to paint or to make this incredible piece of art that they send. And we welcome it all.
I think seeing the variety of expressions and how there are so many that are so different, but then there are these echoes throughout, you know, many of them where themes or ideas keep showing up. And then also just seeing the multimedia aspect of it, you know, old slides, letters made out entirely of stamps, or, you know, Polaroids, or cat food cartons. You know, there's this whole range of like materials that people are using.
I think we may have enough to paste and totally cover the outside of the White House.
Yeah, they really have shown up, you know, a sort of Santa sack of mail every day. So it's really cool.
Beatty, so when will you guys stop collecting these postcards for democracy? They're a cutoff point. I mean, it seems like this could go on forever without any end. I mean, people could just be drawing stuff, making stuff, and sending them to you.
I think we'll stop collecting when people stop sending them in.
Right. Yeah.
And actually, what are you guys doing with all the postcards?
Ultimately, I think we're still figuring out what we're going to do. We have a lot of ideas, but definitely a physical installation of some kind, a digital gallery. And then we're actually exploring sort of doing something with USPS, because they're a big fan of this project, and sort of looking at creating an actual art piece out of all the mail that we've received.
Biddy Wolf and Mark Mothersbaugh are the artists behind Postcards for Democracy, and you can find out more about this project and see some of the postcards on our website, laist.com. That's laist.com. Mark, Biddy, thank you very much.
Ah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, circling back now to our reporters around L.A. County, we turn to KPCC's Aaron Schrank. He's been covering voting centers in Glendale. Aaron, what have things been like over there? What have you been seeing?
Yeah, thank you. I'm at Impressions Banquet Hall, which is just off Brand Boulevard in downtown Glendale. It's been slow and steady so far here today from what I've seen. There was a bit of a lunch rush. But this is basically one of about a dozen vote centers in Glendale, and it's been open for the past 11 days, and the people here tell me it's been kind of slow and steady throughout that time. So it's been more of the same so far here today, but a lot of people here and excited to vote.
Love hearing the word steady. So tell us about the people you've been speaking with. Do any stories stand out?
And there's been a lot of interesting people. I spoke with a woman who was in her 40s and was voting for the first time in her life. I was speaking earlier with a dialysis patient in a wheelchair who was here with her voting with her two adult sons, and she had a position on the dialysis proposition because of her situation. But probably what stands out the most is the vote center itself, as I mentioned, is a banquet hall, an Armenian banquet hall that's used for weddings and parties typically. And it's been closed, as you might imagine, since May because, you know, no large gatherings. And so the owner of this place, he's been here today and here for the last 11 days. I spoke with him, Kachik Tamorian. He told me that this was basically a good way to repurpose his community space for his community.
Every day I get to see lots of my former customers coming in, waving me, talking to me. And as soon as they hear this location became a voting place, they jump and come and vote, which is what the main reason and the purpose is.
So obviously a new vote center here in Glendale, but Tamorian says you'd like to do this again if he has the chance, a pandemic or no pandemic. As you know, Glendale is sort of the capital city of the Armenian diaspora in the U.S., yeah. And many of the voters I've been speaking to here in Glendale are Armenian Americans, many of whom are politically charged up right now amid conflict in their ancestral homeland. We've seen Armenian Americans for more than a month now protesting in the streets of L.A. amid escalating conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan. And so many folks here at the voting are, you know, they want U.S. leaders to intervene. And so that's on many minds here.
Aaron, one more thing really quick. We're talking earlier on the show about poll watchers. Have you seen any citizen poll watchers at the voting centers you've gone to?
So I haven't seen anyone that I know that I would describe as a citizen poll watcher, but there have been a couple of incidents or disturbances here at this center today. I heard from poll workers, basically people driving past in with their trucks and honking horns and basically doing some electioneering from their cars. But I was speaking with a poll worker who mentioned that some people keep coming back and they've tried to get the police to intervene, but no luck.
That's KPCC's Aaron Schrank covering voting centers in Glendale. Aaron, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, even if you're a politics junkie, today might be a little bit too much to be plugged into all day, all night. So to that end, we have a few easy-to-consume podcasts that you can connect with to help you disconnect just for a little while. That's coming up next when Take Two continues in about 60 seconds. Stay with us. Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC and on kpcc.org. I'm A. Martinez. All right, if you're feeling a little on edge today and looking for a listen that's calm, relaxing, and chill, well, you have come to the right place, because if there is anyone that is calm, relaxed, and chill, that's our friend Nick Kwa, host of the LA Studios podcast, Serving a Pod, and he has a short list of recommendations he has compiled just for you. All right, Nick, first things first, how are you doing? What's your self-care routine involved today of all days?
Well, you know, I'm going to do another hour of work and I'm going to unplug after that. And then, do you remember that M. Night Shyamalan movie, Signs?
Yes.
So, do you remember that scene slightly before the end game where, like, Mel Gibson and the other people are sitting around a table eating their meals, trying to get one last meal in before the alien invasion? That's kind of how it feels right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I get, you know, you just want to be with your loved ones and kind of just reflect on life and everything that's happening. And yeah, I get that. That makes a lot of sense. All right, now let's get to your recommendations, Nick. What do you recommend for those of us that are feeling maybe anxious today?
So there's a very small, like, micro genre almost of podcast that's nothing but environmental sounds, or, you know, just like raw tape that picks up empty, but, you know, natural sound somewhere. So if you poke around podcast listening enough, you'll find a bunch of them. But there's two I really like. The first one's called Walking. It's just called Walking, just the word. It's by the author John Wallum. It's basically sound recordings of him going on long hikes. It's just him walking, leaves crunching, and occasionally he, like, does an ad read. It's great. And there's another one that's slightly more global. It's called Field Recordings. Let's play you a clip from the latest release, actually. That just gives you a sort of a sense of what this is. That's it.
Wow. Well, you know, that's actually very relaxing because, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, birds are very non-threatening, I would think. That actually got me a little relaxed. So how does that work, Nick? How do people send in these recordings?
Yeah, my understanding is that it's kind of a collective group project. The show takes submissions and contributions from audio producers around the world. You know, some of them are bird sounds like this. Sometimes it's a stormy season somewhere. But it's, you know, wherever somebody is, if they feel like there's a nice bit of environmental sound, they capture it and then they send it off to these guys.
All right. So what about someone who wants to get away from the news today and just get lost in a good story? Any recommended distractions there?
Yeah. So this is probably a good opportunity to talk about what is very likely my personal favorite podcast episode this year. It's an all-timer. So there's this show called Reply All, which I would argue is sort of we're going to look back at that as being one of the great creations of the podcast era. Anyway, they started doing stories about the internet, in part because our lives are so embedded to the internet right now. The show has just evolved into this sort of all-purpose story machine. Anyway, right before the pandemic earlier this year, they dropped an episode that completely exploded. It went viral. It became instantly legendary. And the premise is this. One of the hosts, PJ Vogt, he gets a help request from this guy called Tyler Gillette, who tells him about a song that popped into his head not long ago. The song kind of sounds like the Bare Naked Ladies. It kind of sounds like Savage Garden, if you remember those bands. anyway, he remembers the song very clearly, and he swears he heard it on the radio when he was younger. But when he looked it up on Google, he couldn't find any trace of it. And so the question becomes, like, whether the song actually exists or if it's just sort of this phantom creation in his head. And the episode follows PJ going down his rabbit hole in search of the song, which may or may not exist. So here's a cut of Tyler, the guy who has the song stuck in his head, sort of explaining what it sounds like.
So the intro, the kind of intro to Measures, it's like this. I think it's like a flute. And the whole kind of conceit of the song is better than a, you know, and then they sort of rattle off a bunch of things like, yeah, you're better than a day when
I'm on with the I'm not going to spoil what happens, but the episode goes to some really strange places. It's super fun, super smart. And if you haven't heard this episode yet, you should pick it up.
That that's never going to leave my head the rest of the week, Nick. Thanks for that, I guess.
You're welcome.
All right, now, looking ahead to tonight, we may be wrestling with a lot of uncertainty or other feelings that could get in the way of sleep. So do you have any recommendations for sleeping?
Yeah, you know, you don't even have to wait till tonight. If you want to just take a nap right now or something to pass the time, maybe to just flash forward to tomorrow. And if you need a hand falling asleep, there is this really kind of growing subgenre of podcasts dedicated to helping you fall asleep. The archetypal podcast in this genre, I think, is a show called Well, it has a slightly unfortunate name of Sleep With Me. And this guy, Drew Ackerman, he does this show and he basically does this thing where he records himself telling nonsensical stream of consciousness stories. I think the idea is that, you know, these nonsensical stories can give you a bit of sound that to distract your spiraling brain so you can fall asleep. Here's a cut of the most recent episode where Drew is kind of talking about the Great British Bake Off.
And also remember that biscuit is kind of like a cookie. August 28th to August 30th, 2018. Then we see lambs, plants, and ducks. Nature, sun, stream, peaceful place. Wish I felt peaceful, someone says inside. Nerve-wracking, not as stressful as my thesis, surreal. They don't, the actual, but people, oh, there's more people have been in space than in that tent.
Nick, who's the person behind this? And have you actually successfully fallen asleep listening to this one?
I have. I actually, a couple of years ago, I had like a heavy bout of insomnia, and this podcast was really helpful for me for that. It's just, his name is Drew Ackerman. He's just this kind of random guy in the Bay Area, I believe. And I think he's like a librarian in his day job or something like that.
Mm. Now, you Nick, you mentioned the movie Signs, the M. Night Shyamalan movie Signs, starring mm-hmm. Mel Gibson at the start. Regardless of what happens today, Nick, I give you permission, because Joaquin Phoenix was in that movie too, to swing away, Nick. Swing away.
Thank you. All right? Appreciate that.
That's Nick Kwa. He's host of the LA Studios podcast about podcasts, Serving a Pod. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. Nick, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, as we wrap up the show today, we're going to circle back to one of our reporters in the field. Mariana Dale has just been in Santa Clarita, but we caught you in the car. Mariana, where are you going now?
I am headed to the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley. I've heard from the elections office that this has been the busiest voting center in Ventura County, and so forward to talking to people after they cast their ballot or drop it off.
Nice. Okay, so what did you wind up seeing in Santa Clarita?
So a lot of, you know, it was very peaceful, not a lot of lines everywhere. People were able to go in immediately and cast their ballot. It seems like the sanitary COVID-19 precautionary practice. There was hand sanitizer everywhere. People had masks on, very orderly. People seemed like at least the actual process of voting itself was easy, even if they were making some tough choices.
So was there a feeling of relief or was there any kind of joy that this process, at least for them, is over?
Yeah, I think people were really wanting to make sure that their voice was heard. I heard a lot of people talk about very personal issues motivating their choices. I talked to a gentleman who works in the boat building industry. He says that he has had steadier work under the Trump administration than under recent presidents, and so after sitting out the 2016 election, he definitely wanted to vote this year because he wants to see that continue. I talked to someone else who is a law student, and they are really interested in the outcome of the district attorney race because that will shape their career in the future. People really care about what's happening in their community, and they want that to be reflected in the votes that they're casting.
One more thing really quick. You got to speak to some young poll workers. What do they have to say?
I did. 17 years old. They work at Academy of the Canyons, and this is one of the first normal things they've gotten to do all year. They haven't been in class since March. They're getting to like kind of hang out with other teenagers and help people vote. And I really got the sense that even though they themselves couldn't vote yet, they're seniors in high school, they're definitely paying attention to the political process. They want to see candidates in the future who care about the environment and climate change. And they're ready to vote. And I think this was kind of the first step in that process for them.
That's KPCC's early education reporter, Mariana Dale. Mariana, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, stay with us all afternoon long right here on 89.3 KPCC. We'll be covering the last day to vote all day long. Remember, you still have time. If you're in line by 8, you will get a chance to vote. So get in line by 8 and stay in line. More Take 2 tomorrow at 2. Talk to you then.